From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on November 18th, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. On this episode of The Lead, we hear from State House Republican leaders on their priorities for next session. We're setting the table there. We get the final recount numbers in one of the four Senate Democratic seats Republicans flipped. We're also taking a look at leadership changes in the U.S. Senate. And over in the U.S. House, we're talking aliens, or specifically unidentified anomalous phenomena. Yes, we have two of our lawmakers from our delegation on that committee. We hear what they were talking about in D.C. And we're not getting out of this episode without talking about some economic news, including Tom Barkin. You're barking at the right tree here with Tom talking about inflation and tariffs. We got all that in this episode and more. You can be a part of our wind down section at 803-563-7169. Irregardless of what you think, guys, give us a shout. That's got to get someone riled up there. 803-563-7169. 100 days, live right around the corner. Looking at what's on tap for this week in the State House, there are days of judge candidate vetting underway on the Judicial Merit Selection Commission. And look at the economic calendar here in the state. The State Board of Economic Advisors meets Tuesday morning to get our first look at general fund revenue estimates for the coming legislative year. What's that mean? It means we're going to see how much money lawmakers have to play with in the budget. And I'm going to guess there's a couple hundred million laying around. We are officially less than 2 months away from the start of the legislative session, and leaders of the House Republican supermajority, including the Republican caucus and the far-right Freedom Caucus, outlined their legislative priorities last week with reporters. Now, I was sadly out of town, but Mayon Schechter was there catching both of those press conferences and their priorities that we'll be covering January through May of next year, which is the first year of the two-year session. Here's Mayon.
Republicans in the South Carolina House of Representatives are planning for a big and heavy legislative session. Tax cuts, school choice expansion, modernization of the state's energy generation capacity, and possibly a redo of a major health agency consolidation. And with former President Donald Trump headed back to the White House in January, Republican leaders say they have the perfect opportunity to ensure a transformative year without the headaches of fighting with the federal government.
We're not going to be fighting back and pushing back on policy, but we're going to work together to improve this country and improve this state.
House Speaker Merle Smith, a Sumter Republican, again plans to lead the lower chamber over the next 2 years.
We are a state with a growing economy, with a growing population, and we have had a bold agenda over this last legislative session that was successful, and I anticipate that we will continue in that.
The House Republican Caucus met last week to hash out their agenda for the 2025-26 year, what they're calling the six pillars for progress. To start the year, Smith told reporters he wants to tackle Hurricane Helene relief for those areas of the state hardest hit. He said the caucus plans to revisit the school choice debate next year after the state Supreme Court ruled spending tax dollars on private school tuition was unconstitutional. And Smith says he believes an energy bill will move quickly through the State House. That's not all. Over the two-year session, House Republican leader Davey Hyatt of Pickens said Republicans want to prioritize, quote, historic tax cuts, in part by further reducing the income tax rate. The caucus's legislative priority list includes raising state teacher pay and reforming the county magistrate selection process. It also includes social issues, such as, quote, defending pro-life Second Amendment policies, according to Hyatt, who said in his 20-year State House career, he has voted on some 14 abortion related bills. Asked whether that means trying to further restrict abortion access beyond the state's current six-week ban with limited exceptions, Hyatt says it is too early to say.
I believe that with the new makeup of the Senate, we believe that the Senate can get something like that through, and I'm asking the Senate to get us something over here. We'll take a look at it.
Republicans now hold a supermajority in both chambers, and the party controls all statewide elected offices and the governor's mansion. House Democrats, who will get together next month to decide leadership positions and their legislative wish list, hold only 36 seats of the 124-member chamber and are unlikely to be able to block Republican aims. So what could stand in the House GOP's own way? Potentially members of their own party.
My name is Jordan Pace. I'm the the new chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, and many of our members are here. We're here. Thank y'all for coming out today. We're here to talk about our legislative agenda, legislative priorities for 2025.
The very same day the House GOP caucus unveiled its agenda, members of the hard right House Freedom Caucus met to do the same. The group consists of around 20 or so House Republicans who are not official members of the House Majority Caucus due to internal disagreements between the two camps. Representative Pace of Berkeley County says they will push their Republican colleagues to embrace their agenda. In 8 bullet points, the Freedom Caucus wish list includes closing primaries, reducing taxes, fixing roads, and ending joint and several liability that bars and restaurants complain is hurting their businesses. Though outnumbered, the Freedom Caucus has seen some success, in part by stalling legislation via procedural moves and unseating incumbents in this year's June primaries. Here's Pace again.
I don't think our tactics are going to change a whole lot. We were going to put forward what we think is the most conservative policies that should pass and what the people want, and harder ground on that.
For now, House GOP leaders say their group is unified behind its own agenda.
Now, like I said, with it being the first year, that means bills, a dearth of bills will be pre-filed. This is a way for folks to get their legislation out there ASAP. That means as soon as possible. Get it on other folks' radars and see what aligns with priorities and get it ready to be sent over to whichever committee the bill is relative to on the first day of session. So, you know, if you have a bill dealing with money, it goes to the Finance Committee in the Senate or the Ways and Means Committee in the House. And that happens on the first day of session, so we'll get there when we get there. You know, and then kind of drilling down more on that committee process, which since we're here, let's talk about it.
Yes.
The committee chairman determines priorities on when a bill will get a subcommittee hearing, and that process gets underway. Now, of the thousands of bills filed, only a few hundred exclusive little legislative bills make their way through the committee process, and fewer make it to the floor, then across the lobby to the other chamber, through the other chamber's committee process, onto that floor for a vote, and then back to the original chamber if there are any changes made. And then if it passes there, without the need for a conference committee, which is when they have to hash out more differences, well, the bill will make it all the way to the governor, who can sign it or veto it. That's my version of how a bill becomes law, folks. There's a lot of tears in between there, though.
Awesome.
You can talk to Schoolhouse this, okay? Now, the pre-file date for bills for the House are December 5th and December 12th. For the Senate, it is December 11th. So they're going to be putting a bunch of bills online. You can see them at scstatehouse.gov when they happen. Now, both chambers will be in town December 4th for organizational sessions, with the House also coming in on the 3rd. Again, they're all these members are getting the first day of school stuff, like picking their seats, etc., out of the way before the first day of school on January 14th. And we're going to be talking a lot about process this session, but also we're going to give you some insight of what's happening, reading between the lines, and also poking around behind the scenes when legislation is moving. We'll be your guide for the session coming up. That being said, let's look at the Senate really quick, where Senator Gerald Malloy, a Democrat who has served the Darlington Heavy Senate District 29 since 2002, has officially lost his re-election bid following an automatic recount. Republican J.D. Chapman won the seat that also covers parts of Chesterfield, Lee, Marlboro, and Sumter counties by 87 votes. Every vote counts, folks. Republicans also flipped Senator Kevin Johnson's Southern PD district in the Williamsburg area, Senator Vernon Stevens' Orangeburg district, and Senator Mike Fanning's Fairfield district, making the chamber a supermajority of 34 Republicans and 12 Democrats. That is the state Senate there, folks, so we will be watching that come January. But let's go to Washington in Congress, where the Republican majority in the U.S. Senate is set at 53-47. While that means they will be able to move preferred legislation with greater ease, some ease, don't expect these cabinet nominations to just slip on through unless they get recess appointments. But that'd be giving up one of their main powers right there as lawmakers, as senators. Now, especially if there's an appointment like embattled former Florida Representative Matt Gaetz, who resigned from the House on the news of being named President-elect Donald Trump's attorney general pick. Now, you didn't see New York Representative Elise Stefanik resign upon being named Trump's UN pick, mainly because Gaetz has a damning House ethics report, which was set to be released before Gaetz resigned, and in fact, it still could be. Now, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott is officially the chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee. That is the fundraising arm for Senate Republicans, bringing in that bacon, bringing in that money ahead of the 2026 midterms. The position puts Scott, who is also set to become the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, in the leadership ranks with new Majority Leader John Thune, as well as Assistant Majority Leader John Barrasso, GOP Conference Chair Tom Cotton, GOP Policy Committee Chair Shelley Moore Capito, and GOP Conference Vice Chair James Linkford. So Senator Scott is part of the Senate Leadership A-Team right there. You know, we always got someone up there. Now, Scott said this at the leadership press conference announcing those new positions following their election last week.
Our goal with our leader, John Thune, is to make sure that we achieve those objectives. My passion is making sure that we defend our current seats and expand the map and expand our majority so that President Trump does not have 2 years with a Republican majority in the Senate, but he has 4 years in control of making sure that America's agenda comes home to each and every household.
Over in the House, First District Congresswoman Nancy Mace, chair of the Oversight Subcommittee on Cybersecurity, Information Technology, and Government Innovation, held a joint hearing with another subcommittee titled Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena, Exposing the Truth.
Okay. Scully!
We all know the truth is in a basement. There was a guy not smoking cigarettes in the corner, but I think he was vaping. Looked very suspicious. Now, this hearing came a day after the Pentagon released its annual report on UFO sightings, or as they're officially called, Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena, which found 21 currently unexplainable UAPs. In total, though, there were 757 new reports of UAPs, which were received between May 2023 and June 2024, and were investigated by the Department of Defense's All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, or ARO for short. This, according to the report by the Defense Department and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Now, some of these UAPs have been debunked, were found to be normal objects, but there were 21 cases, like we said, that the report said, quote, merit further analysis, quote, due to, quote, anomalous characteristics and or behaviors. So 21 out of those 757 that were a little hard to put the finger on. That's 21 episodes right there for the X-Files. Now, the report said that there's no evidence so far to substantiate life from another planet being involved in these sightings. But in the hearing room, with Mace wielding the gavel, there wasn't much more clarity, even as she called for greater transparency during that hearing, including this exchange with Luis Elizondo, who's an author and former Department of Defense official, whom she asked who built these UAPs.
Well, ma'am, that's precisely why we're here. The problem is that, temporally speaking, over decades, not just the last 10 years, to put this in perspective...
Are these private companies you're implying, or is this non-human intelligence?
It may be both.
Okay.
When it comes to Blue Force Technologies, I would not be able to discuss it.
Okay. Are you read into secret UAP crash retrieval programs?
We would have to have a conversation in a closed session, ma'am. I signed documentation 3 years ago that restricts my ability to discuss specifically crash retrievals. I submitted for my book through the Dopser process, which took a year for it to be reviewed. And what is in the book is what I was told I'm allowed to talk about.
Has the government conducted secret UAP crash retrieval programs, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Were they designed to identify and reverse engineer alien craft, yes or no?
Yes.
Do any U.S. contractors have the same?
I would prefer to address that in a closed session, ma'am.
Okay. In your book, you mentioned government employees who've been injured by UAPs, placed on leave, and receiving government compensation for their injuries. Is that correct?
That is correct.
How can the government deny we have recovered craft if they're paying people because they've been injured by recovered craft?
Ma'am, that's a great question. That's why I think we're here again, because I've seen the documentation by the U.S. government for several of these individuals who have sustained injuries as a result of a UAP incident.
It's a crazy idea, right?
I also wanted to include more of Elizondo's opening statement so you can have a bit more background on him. He spent 10 years running the Pentagon's program investigating these sightings.
Advanced technologies not made by our government or any other government are monitoring sensitive military installations around the globe. Furthermore, the U.S. is in possession of UAP technologies, as are some of our adversaries. I believe we are in the midst of a multi-decade secretive arms race one funded by misallocated taxpayer dollars and hidden from our elected representatives and oversight bodies. For many years, I was entrusted with protecting some of our nation's most sensitive programs. In my last position, I managed a special access program on behalf of the White House and the National Security Council. As such, I appreciate the need to protect certain sensitive intelligence and military information. I consider my oath to protect secrets as sacred, and I will always put the safety of the American people first.
Elizondo was one of four witnesses before the committee, and he was a popular one. And one 4th District Congressman, William Timmons, who is also part of the joint hearing, had questions for, including when it comes to UAP sightings over military bases.
Certainly there seems to be some indication that they're being provocative, meaning that they're, in some cases, literally splitting aircraft formations right down the middle. So that's an air safety issue. The question is it the frequency increasing? And the response is, it depends. Yes, it's possible that there is an increase in frequency, but it's also possible that there's heightened awareness now, and there's also more pervasiveness of technology out there that's collecting this information and that can record this information. So we're not quite sure yet if it's actually an increase in numbers of these events, or is it that we have better equipment now that to record these things, and we have a better ability, if you will, to analyze these things.
And that's my next question. It seems that a lot of these sightings occur near military installations. Do you think that these UAPs are intentionally targeting military installations, or do you think that we have increased abilities to monitor surrounding the military installations?
Sir, maybe both. Part of my concern is we have something in the Department of Defense and the intelligence community called IPB, Initial Preparations of the Battle Space. And we use equities like ISR, Intelligence, Surveillance, Reconnaissance, and other type of equities and technologies to prep the battle space. And certainly, you know, if I was wearing my national security hat, even if there was a 2% chance that there was some sort of hostile intent here, that's 2% higher than we really can accept. And so we must figure out, there's a calculus, capabilities versus intent, in order to identify if something is a national security threat. We've seen some of the capabilities, yet we have no idea the intent. And so this is why this discussion is somewhat, I think, problematic from a governmental perspective, because we have no idea.
The truth is out there. Yeah, you know, the podcast is the truth. I know, that's the point of the podcast. It's an X-Files joke. Okay, how about some economic truths? Can we talk about that? Thank you. Federal Reserve President Tom Barkin said last week that high union wage settlements and the possibility of coming tariff increases are among the uncertainties that could make Federal Reserve officials more cautious about finally knocking inflation down to 2%. Barkin, who oversees the regional Federal Reserve Bank district that includes the Carolinas, said while it's still too soon to declare victory with inflation, it will continue to fall in 2025. He spoke about this as well as potential tariffs on Yahoo Finance with Jenna Schoenberger last week.
You know, on the data side, I've always expected that the last half of this year, core inflation would stay flat somewhere in the high twos on a PCE basis. And the reason for that is that the reads last year were so good in the second half of the year that the comps were just very difficult. And so the numbers are coming in. They're about where we expected. We may get some good news in the first quarter of the year, because you'll remember the first quarter was not very good from an inflation standpoint. I am still seeing progress. And where I'm seeing it most is when I talk to people. And the way I'd put it is this: consumers have been frustrated by high prices for a while, but they're finally acting on it. They're buying on promotion, they're trading down, they're going to lower price outlets. You can look at earnings reports of the everyday low price guys and you can see it. Consumers are making choices, and those choices are sending messages to price setters that their pricing power has just gotten limited. And so I'm seeing that roll out as I test with businesses what they're planning for the first quarter in terms of price increases. I'm not hearing the kind of inflation we've seen in the past. And that gives me hope that as we get through the first quarter, those numbers will come down.
So it sounds like going into next year, do you expect inflation to come down from this sort of sticky core level that we've been seeing right now?
It's my expectation and it's my hope. You know, trust but verify.
Of course. President-elect Donald Trump has pledged across the board tariffs 10% on all U.S. imports, 60% on all Chinese imports. Do you see tariffs as a one-time reset in prices, or could there be ongoing longer-term inflationary effects that would cause you to rethink the battle with inflation?
We have a researcher on my team who wrote a great article on electoral uncertainty. saying you think election uncertainty is about the candidate, but it's actually more about what's the agenda actually going to be, as opposed to, you know, what people have talked about, and then how much of it gets implemented. And I think it's, we're a long way away from knowing what we're going to have in tariffs, how big they're going to be, whether we have retaliation or not. And so it's awfully hard to know what the impact is on inflation. Obviously, if you increase the cost of goods coming in the country, that cost will, at least in some part, get passed on. But a lot depends on what we've got, how long it lasts, what the behaviors are on the backside. And it's just hard to make a call on that.
Barkin's remarks come after the October Consumer Price Index found inflation ticked up for the month. The Commerce Department put inflation at an annual rate of 2.6%, which accelerated from 2.4% in September, and it reached its highest level since July. This 2.6% rate, however, matched Wall Street forecasts. There was a 2.3% decline in domestic gasoline prices. That helped keep prices lower. Now, Yahoo News reports that the CME Group's FedWatch suggests a 79% chance that the Fed will still lower its benchmark lending rate by a quarter of a percentage point next month in Washington. That is up from around 62% prior to the data release. So we're going to see those interest rates coming down again, likely in December. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're glad you're here. A.T. Shar, lead producer, you are here with me.
I'm here. I've never left, folks. I stayed here all weekend.
He's here.
I was here all weekend.
Well, one of us, it's like the presidency and the vice presidency.
Yeah.
One has to be.
Lone survivor type stuff. Yeah.
The wall between you and me here is blast proof.
Oh, yeah.
We had to invest the money.
I'm the one proofed, though.
It doesn't make any sense. I'm a man of the people. What happens to me happens to me, but you will carry on.
Gavin, he doesn't understand the Pope moment. He refuses the protection. He has to be able to taste them, smell them. Like he wants to be in the midst, the dirty masses.
MMA fights.
Yeah,
I'm going to the fights ringside. Speaking of fights,
Gavin wants the sweat to drip on him. He wants to be in the splash, zone.
Let's get that instant replay splash zone cam.
Yeah, Gavin. Ooh. Gavin, the sports world in Colombia is pretty good. You know, the game corks. Corks are doing good. Before we get into what we're going to talk about, as an Eagles fan, I love saying go birds.
Go birds. Good morning.
Okay. I drop it in the podcast all the time.
All the time. You do. Yes.
No one in college football has cornered the go birds market. Mm. I think as Gamecocks fans should say go birds to each other.
You are just pushing that because you know people are still going to confuse the Eagles.
Because you can say go cocks and it's like hi, you know, when you get a low down dirty go birds, you know, you can get down and have some fun with it.
It's a bird. Why not?
It's fun to say. No one else is saying it. I think we should say go birds. But anyway, Gavin, our spirits are riding high right now.
Well, yeah, I'm good. I'm happy. Yeah, Clemson, Gamecock, everyone won.
Hey.
You know what that means for the psyche of the state? Everyone's happy.
The psyche is good. But
Gavin,
Gavin, you partook in some sport that even I didn't take in, but a lot of people did, okay? And of course, we're talking about what?
We're talking about the boxing match between Mike Tyson.
If you can call it that. Everyone was asking me, am I going to watch this? One, I don't want to stay up that late to watch it. Two, I don't want to see a 27-year-old fight a 60-year-old. What is that?
58.
Don't you age him. Don't you age him.
But to be fair, it was not on my radar. I was in the mountains. I was not watching TV.
You're at altitude.
I was at 4,118 feet in the highlands, not to be confused with Scotland, highlands. Beautiful. You know, you're hanging out. You're watching the fire, snap, crackle, and pop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, no one, of course, I brought the Bluetooth speaker, but I forgot the charger, so that was that. But you just had the music videos on the background, country music, not Gavin's playlist, but that's okay.
Gross.
It had to be family friendly.
Ugh.
Great time. But I think, what were we doing? We were playing games or something like that. Then all of a sudden we're like, oh, should we watch the fight? And I'm like, sure, why not? You know, I don't care. I just wanted to see Mike Tyson. You know, I think he had it for a good bit. I mean, he hung in there for all 8 rounds. He wasn't as fast, obviously. But, you know, they both made money either way. I think he made 20. And
he made $20 million.
Just for surviving.
I think I would get punched a bunch for 20 mil.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to set up Rena and then all of Rena's children forever and ever.
My millennial brain was like, okay, I'm here for this. Like, I remember Mike Tyson vividly throughout the 90s and early 2000s just because he was always there.
Yeah.
And I had never really watched him box, even like the iconic, you know. Chump.
No, I didn't watch that.
So I watched this one time. I was like, okay, let's go see.
My dad was too cheap to pay for pay-per-view.
Like,
He's so annoying.
So annoying. The way that he entered, he entered on like this like low rider, and then they all have their Celsius, and they're all like promoting everything.
That's who Tyson walks in. You love Celsius.
I love the Celsius. Even the people behind him in the ring, you could see were strategically holding the can like race car drivers. And then Tyson just walks in. Solo, old school. Like, that was like what I liked seeing, that contrast between this classic, you know, goat, if you will,
versus
this guy who's just, it's an emblematic of the generation.
I was just about to say that, Gavin. This, if we're talking about Gen Z stealing 90s
stuff, go ahead and do it. Like,
they're stealing 80s, 90s stuff. This is the greatest.
I don't have to go past go to get there. It's like, well, you're supposed to, but you have this card that you just now don't have to go past go.
No, I'm
but
just going to pay $20 million for a semblance of
credentials.
You know,
clearly he has trained, like, he was going up against this big guy, but it's just, he's never going to be that guy that made it like all these other boxers, in my mind.
He never cut his teeth.
Let's use the word privilege
here. He's never cut his teeth anywhere. He didn't earn his way up. He bought his way up.
Yes.
He was famous for not boxing and then decided to box and jumped like many social strata in the boxing world to just be an attraction.
Art Kardashian, if you will.
If we're talking about entertainment and this as entertainment, sure, why not?
Yeah.
You know, was the stream as bad as everyone said?
Oh, let's get to that. Yeah, then it's like buffering.
Yeah,
like Netflix, you know, talk all you want about broadcast media and the legacy media.
Mm-hmm.
We don't buffer, baby. That's live. Like, it's on, like... We've never had that issue. You don't have that issue like big debate nights or the Super Bowl. Like, it goes out. You pick it up. Like, you guys are connected to everyone's house. Like, what's going on here? Buy some more bandwidth. I don't know how that works. But, embarrassing for Netflix.
I know that they have an NFL game, I think, this year.
Uh-huh.
Like a Black Friday game after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, because
an NFL game's going to destroy it.
Because even Amazon is doing live sports, too.
Yeah, they're not the worst.
Is it Monday?
It's Thursday night footballs, which are the worst games, which the Eagles played on Thursday night, and I loved getting it out of the way.
You were free.
I was free. The onus was off of me. It was over. I got to enjoy my Sunday. My brothers were in town, so I just got, like, quality family time and just got to laugh at other teams. It was great.
Still have not met your brother. Still haven't met your father.
He's here for another he probably just went to the airport.
You could take him to the football game?
Yeah, I took them tailgating. They went tailgating.
That's all you really need.
Yeah, but we didn't have enough tickets for everyone to go in.
Yeah.
Amazing game.
Good for Beamer.
I would say that final play when we won the game was the least Gamecock USC thing I have ever seen since I've moved down here. The fact that we didn't stumble, bumble, and actively lose that game, not only did we not do that, we went down the field and stole it and won it and beat them. Like, come on.
It was close
great.
For Clemson, too. I mean,
Clemson
right down to the wire.
Clemson was playing a bad team, though,
and
we weren't.
Yeah, and I was with a bunch of Clemson fans, too.
I'm very excited for this Clemson-Carolina game this year, folks.
I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there.
Breaking news.
Breaking news exclusive. You can find me there.
Gavin at altitude again.
But no, it was funny because the game was like, there's like a minute left. You know, like a minute becomes 20 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm dying to get another mimosa. But I cannot pop the bottle of champagne. Because that'd be so inappropriate. You know, it'd be like celebrating before. Even if that's not what I was doing,
If we're talking juju, that's a transgression.
So I am fully aware of this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting there quietly. I had already taken the cage off the Prosecco. So I was like, oh crap, I can't
quietly
come
as
on
possible.
But it was perfect though, because once the game was over, I was like, pah! And everyone's like, ah! Like, it was a hype beast. Bring me on your family vacations, y'all. I'm available for rent.
Anyway, Gavin, let's end it here. End it just like the Gamecocks did, on an up note, on a win right there, okay? We won that one. You win your week, okay? Call in, please.
Guys.
Please.
803-563-7169. Let us know about how you are celebrating the seasons in the darkness and the vortex. And you can also leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. And stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
I'm trying to tell you, inflammable means flammable.
it's a horrible word. It's a horrible.
Inflammable means flammable.
We got rid of inflammable because it's so bad.
Yeah, but it means it's the same thing.